She break the little nest egg I was sitting on. Where's all the money gone? Where's all the money gone?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Christopher Pyle, who teaches constitutional law and civil liberties at Mount Holyoke College and is the author of Military Surveillance of Civilian Politics and Getting Away with Torture. In 1970, he disclosed the U.S. military's surveillance of civilian politics and worked as a consultant to three congressional committees, including the Church Committee. His articles on military surveillance of civilian politics won the Polk and Hillman Awards for Investigative Journalism, and he is currently a member of the board of directors of the ACLU of Massachusetts, and he has an article at counterpunch.org, Edward Snowden, Profile in Courage. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christopher Pyle.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Christopher, I must say that Robert Baer sort of pushed a few more scales off my eyes, not that I have too many left, I think, talking about Congress is itself a venture capital organization, and Washington is Nigeria on the Potomac. I mean, it seems to me that he's right on in terms of looking into this aspect of this story about the CIA, this NSA or contractor who's holed up somewhere in Hong Kong, that it's really, again, as the old Watergate adage was, follow the money.
Yes, isn't it remarkable? I used to spend all my time working on civil liberties questions, including civil liberties in the intelligence community. But my current book that I'm writing is on campaign finance reform, because money now rules Congress, and it rules the federal budget. 70% of the intelligence budget now goes to private corporations. Members of Congress don't spend their time overseeing the intelligence agencies. Instead, they spend their time soliciting contracts for their constituent corporations from the intelligence agencies. And this is a radical change. It's where the money's at. Bob Baer is right. And if we are going to have a constitution, what we really need is not to go to Washington and lobby on ideas of liberty and equality and justice. We got to go and buy back the Constitution. We got to give money to politicians on the intelligence committees and elsewhere to get back our Constitution. Everything has become commodified. Our Constitution is a commodity. Civil libertarians are just another interest group in the eyes of the politicians to be mollified if they can help the politicians get reelected.
So, Christopher Pyle, there, it's too idealistic to think that you can come up with a regime of taking the money out of politics and putting the voters back in, because, as you know, we have some of the worst statistics in terms of who the numbers that vote in elections. Here in Los Angeles, we just elected a new mayor who was identical to the other one that ran, the other candidate who ran. They both wasted tons of money on two campaigns, a runoff and a general campaign. And we're getting to the point where you're going to need $1 million to run for dog catcher in our politics. It's not to mention that the last election cycle, according to investigative journalist John Nichols and Bob McChesney in their latest book, Dollarocracy, the last campaign cost $10 billion.
And the next one will cost more. And there are actually two powerful forces of corruption involved in this story. The first is money in politics. The second is the bloated secrecy system. Everything is classified secret these days, and it doesn't need to be. Bradley Manning disclosed, 500,000 documents that were classified secret or confidential, with no discernible harm to the republic, because anything classified at that level is innocuous. Only a few things classified top secret might be real secrets. Most real secrets are classified well above top secret.
Well, this guy, actually, Snowden, released stuff that was special compartmentalized information, which is pretty much above the top. I mean, it's literally a finding from the President of the United States about who we're going to target for cyber warfare, which wasn't obviously very welcome on the eve of him lecturing the Chinese leader about.
Yes, quite embarrassing. Yes. Well, those are – some of those may be important secrets that are worth protecting. I hadn't heard that he had disclosed targets. I didn't think that was his shtick. He disclosed a court order, which raises an interesting question. Why should a court order be classified? Why should we have secret courts? Aren't secret courts an oxymoron? Aren't they a very contradiction of everything the justice system stands for?
Well, there's so many things that we accept that, you know, at the risk of sounding like Ron Paul, I mean, that violate the Constitution. I mean, the Fourth Amendment is all but shredded. For example, I think it's Article 1 of the Constitution that says that the government shall publish all revenues and expenses in a budget in a public way. I can't remember the exact text of the Constitution, but it's very clear that it says that the government has to publish a public budget. Well, we have black budgets, you know. The IRS,
right.
The IRS can invade your person and papers under the Fourth Amendment. There are a lot of, you know, there's been incremental bites at the Constitution, but the secrecy culture really operates in this multi-billion-dollar way. That's, I think, quite new. I mean, this contractor phenomenon, which is – it was bad enough that the old military-industrial complex had a snout in the trough and was raiding the Treasury since Eisenhower coined the phrase. But now you have this extra layer of avarice and theft.
Yes, and that began about 1980. After the Church Committee, on which I worked, finished its – job, we created these permanent intelligence committees and couldn't get people of any great distinction to serve on them because there was no money to be made on them. Members of Congress joined committees in proportion to the capacity of those committees to help them raise money. But then, in the 80s, as the counterterrorism business got going, as Iran-Contra got going and such, people began to realize that there's money to be made in this game. And then they began to get more active members. And today, now, people want to be on the intelligence committees because there's so much money to be raised doing it. And these are the same people who will now denounce Edward Snowden as a traitor and so forth, giving up the crown jewels. But Snowden wouldn't have done what he did if it wasn't for the fact that he knew he could not go to the intelligence committees with his story and get any action. And he couldn't go to the inspector generals in the Defense Department or NSA and get any satisfaction because he saw what happened to Thomas Drake when Thomas Drake went after a similar case of fraud and abuse involving data mining. And so he went to the – became a whistleblower. He committed an act of civil disobedience and became a whistleblower. And he'll probably suffer for it grievously because the government's going to come down on him and claim that he gave away the crown jewels.
Well, clearly
maybe
that's what they're doing.
Maybe he didn't. We'll wait and see on
sure.
that.
Well, again, I'm speaking to Christopher Pyle, who teaches constitutional law and civil liberties at Mount Holyoke College and is the author of Military Surveillance of Civilian Politics and Getting Away with Torture. In 1970, he disclosed the U.S. military surveillance of civilian politics and worked as a consultant to three congressional committees, including the Church Committee. His articles on military surveillance of civilian politics won the Polk and Hillman Awards for Investigative Journalism, and he's currently a member of the Board of Directors of the ACLU of Massachusetts, and he has an article at counterpunch.org, Edward Snowden, Profile in Courage. Now, after the church committee that you worked on, Christopher, and the regime got underway, a lot of people in the CIA and other, well, I guess in other agencies, but mostly the CIA, used to refer to the Intelligence Commission, the House and Senate Select Intelligence Commission, they used to refer to them as the mushroom farm, that we keep them in the dark and every now and then we throw manure on them. But lately you've got people like Michelle Bachmann on the intelligence committees, and some of the earlier guys like Pat Roberts were just pathetic. I mean, embarrassing. So has it served the interest of the secrecy community to have these clearly inadequate, shall we say, to be polite, people like Michelle Bachmann on the committee and Pat Roberts, and I don't think
Mike
Rogers.
Well, that's exactly what any bureaucracy wants. Uh-huh. It wants to have the weakest oversight committee possible. Between having an oversight committee and not having one, it's always better to have one that is weak, because then you can say, as the president claimed, that, oh, yes, we have complete legislative oversight. Everybody has been properly briefed. It's baloney, of course. But to the inattentive public, it works. And so let's say that there is a firestorm of protest from these disclosures. What will happen? Dianne Feinstein and the Senate Intelligence Committee will hold hearings, and nothing will happen.
Well, already Feinstein and the Republican minority chair, Saxby Chambliss, have come out with all kinds of huffing and puffing about how terrible the AP leaks were and how terrible the how much they affected national security. And as Bob Baer pointed out, by the way, and they've done the same with Snowden, Bob Baer pointed out that the only thing that they're arguing about what was compromised in terms of this release revolves around this guy's Zazi Najibullah, who was supposed to be the backpack bomber. I've noticed that he's been Trump put out there as an example of how the metadata intercepted an email that he sent to his handler in Pakistan, asking him how to mix the chemicals to make this PTN explosive, and he included his phone number in Denver, Colorado. I mean, with terrorists like that, you know, who needs interdiction if that's the case? But anyway, it turns out that from what Bob was saying from the court documents, that the Brits were onto this case. Anyway, it had nothing. It wasn't an example as they put out as how wonderful PRISM works.
Well, it's easy to find the needle in the haystack if you know what the needle is and you know its magnetic resonance. That's not hard. And that's the way most investigations go. But this system, run by people like Booz Allen and others, thinks that you find needles in the haystack by adding more hay. They believe that we need much, much more hay. It's all a waste of money. A focused investigation works much better. We now have over 70 fusion centers at the state level. Are you acquainted with those?
No, tell me about them.
These are state police or municipal police intelligence units that exist to collect suspicious incident reports of things happening in local communities. And they think that if they massage enough of that data, they'll find patterns and practices, excuse me, among groups like the Quakers, and will therefore be able to predict future attacks on the Defense Department. It's all nonsense. That's what the Army did when I disclosed its operations. It's what it did with the Counterintelligence Field Activity Unit in 2005, which I helped to disclose, which is now out of business. It's the great Hoover vacuum cleaner, upgraded for the digital age. It promises, by the mystique of algorithms, to actually find actionable intelligence. It does nothing of the sort, as Bob Baer pointed out. I'm a former intelligence officer. He's one of vast more experience than I had, but we both know that the way you conduct an investigation is to start with some leads, start with something substantial. Then maybe you need to track cell phones. Maybe you need to track stuff like that. But what you don't need to do, what they're doing, is recording everybody's cell phone data for 5, 10 years, putting it in a big warehouse, and then searching it later.
Well, because the big warehouse, which is the $5 billion thing that they're building up outside of Salt Lake City in Utah, is going to employ a lot of Republicans. You know, this is really, I'm afraid, this is right-wing welfare, you know. This is socialism. I mean, like, how can all these patriots puff their chests and talk about welfare queens and Obamacare and all of this stuff that they rail against when they're all sucking off this big giant? I can't use the word on the radio.
That's true. Any political persuasion can make money off this. That's what corporations exist to do, is to make money.
Right. Well.
But as Bob said, the way to make money today, and has been for the last 30 years, is to go to Washington with an army full of lobbyists.
Well, Christopher Pyle, let's stay in touch. When your book is done, I'd love to talk to you about it.
I'll be glad to talk with you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Christopher Pyle, who teaches constitutional law and civil liberties at Mount Holyoke College and is the author of Military Surveillance of Civilian Politics and Getting Away with Torture. In 1970, he disclosed the U.S. military surveillance of civilian politics and worked as a consultant to three congressional committees, including the Church Committee. His articles on military surveillance of civilian politics won the Polk and Hillman Awards for Investigative Journalism, and Christopher Pyle is currently a member of the Board of Directors of the ACLU of Massachusetts, and he has an article at counterpunch.org, Edward Snowden, Profile in Courage. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back and assess the latest report on global warming from the International Energy Agency.